Welcome to episode 6 of the NV Access podcast. I'm Jamie Tay.
And I'm Mick Curran.
And you can take the first part of the podcast.
Yes, all right. Well, we're going to talk about the latest release of NVDA that will be coming out very shortly, in a couple of weeks, maybe a week, a couple of weeks.
It's supposed to be Thursday.
Yeah.
But I think we've probably just discovered something that, which is going to delay it.
Yes. But anyway, we'll just quickly cover some of the things that are in this new release. There is quite a lot of bug fixes and changes and features, so please everyone go and read the what's new when you can.
There are quite a lot of bug fixes
to get an idea of everything, but we'll just cover a few here, quite a few. So the first thing is Skype. There are several fixes to Skype. First one being that you can properly arrow around certain input fields in Skype. These are things like, I think it's the contact search one, and the actual chat field as well. Was hard to arrow around. Now that's a lot better now as well. And also probably the thing that more people will be interested in is automatic speaking of chat messages as they come in. But we should note that this is only when you've got that window focused. So as you're, you know, quickly typing chat messages and things, you know when the person is chatting back at you. You don't have to constantly check anymore, which is good. The next thing is right to left support for right to left languages written to the screen. So a little bit of a brief background here. There are certain languages such as Arabic and Hebrew which write their text from right to left instead of left to right. We never really supported this, at least with our display models, what was it written to the screen. So we did some work to enhance that support, and that now enables people using Arabic, typing in Arabic or Arabic applications or other right-to-left languages to access many more pieces of software with NVDA. A lot of it is sort of third-party software that may be specific to their community, but there is one or two, especially Microsoft Office, so editing formulas in Microsoft Excel has been greatly enhanced. Now they're able to know exactly where they're moving through when they're cursoring through their formula. Talking about Excel, we now better support Excel 2013. Previously, if anyone had tried using Excel 2013, they might have got a bit stuck when arrowing around the spreadsheets. This is because as Microsoft is adding much new, better UI automation support to its Office suite, screen readers like NVDA are getting a bit confused because, you know, we rely on one thing for all the past Office suites and then suddenly, you know, things change and things like that. So we've done what we need to do to better handle that in 2013. There's probably other things we need to do, but at least now you can move around the cells and edit them and stuff like that. It also includes now we also read dialogue boxes, message dialogues in Office 2013 when they appear, they will read as proper dialogues now as well. Review modes. We've for a long time now we've had what we call flat review, which is a way of sort of reviewing the screen, the text that's written to the screen.
That's why they're called review modes. Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. We don't always warrant using it all the time. We always believe there are things like object navigation or just moving the focus around, which is probably suited better. But we certainly understand that there are certain applications, certainly older applications, where you do need to read the screen text. So we always had flat review, but we've sort of tightened things up a bit, made the concept a little bit easier, hopefully, to understand. And we've introduced what we call review modes. And there are three review modes: object mode, document mode, and screen mode. And you can switch between these using the original commands you would have used to move to and from flat review. So object mode, when you're in that, you're just reviewing text within the current navigator object. Document mode is only there if you happen to be in a browse mode document, and that will move around the entire browse mode document. And screen mode, of course, reviews all the text on the screen within that current application where the Navigator object is at the time. So you can switch between these, but one thing to note is that because you manually switch between these, the Navigator object now will follow where the review cursor is. So to give you an example, if I go into screen mode and I'm reviewing some kind of dialogue box maybe, and I move to the text that says OK, that might be the OK button, I suppose, and then if I check my Navigator objects, check where it currently is, or I move around, the Navigator object will be already placed on the OK button. You don't actually have to do what we used to have to do, is it was sort of like that jump to the deepest object in Flat Review or whatever. That automatically happens now. You're always there. And there are a couple of times where modes may automatically switch, but this only happens between object and document modes. So, for instance, say you're in object mode and you jump into a browse mode document and you move the cursor around, you may find that you're in document review now and things like that. So these changes hopefully simplifies the way you think about reviewing the screen, but also especially with browse mode documents, and now makes it much easier for you to be reviewing a browse mode document in a nice flat way, but then at any time you can move the Navigator object and get a much better structural view of the document. What else have we done? Windows 8.1, we did one or two changes there to support the new Windows 8.1, which is coming out. There's already been a public preview in June. The new one, the 8.1, which I believe is a free release,
yeah,
is that
is,
right?
It's
yeah,
free. Well, free if you're Windows 8 user.
At one point they said the end of August, but I don't know if that's still true. I guess not.
No idea.
No. So 8.1, the only real change we made there was we made it better to read the to interact with the search field in the start screen in 8.1. So now when you're in the start screen and you start typing, NVDA will automatically announce the result that's selected, and so then you know you can press enter because it is selected, or you can use the arrow keys to move up and down. That makes that quite nice. We did quite a few input language in IME.
Just want to stop you really briefly. The other thing that's worth noting, this is not an NVDA fix, but in 8.1, the notorious Skype crash is also fixed, which proves what we always suspected, that it was a Windows 8 bug. So now when you move into the field to search for a contact, Skype doesn't sort of mysteriously vanish.
Yes, that is very good. So we did some input language things and IME fixes. So this is just for people who may type in other languages. Most of these fixes are for East Asian, but there is a few for in Windows 8. We were speaking the wrong language when you switch to it. That's been fixed. We can also speak conversion modes in Windows 8 as well. And also a few stability fixes. So there were certain input languages or input methods, some Japanese ones, which were announcing garbage and things like that on the desktop when they were activated. And there was also a crash that we fixed as well. So a few cleanup things there, which will be interesting for maybe Chinese, Japanese, and Korean users. Java, we haven't touched Java and Java Access Bridge for quite some time, but
actually, no, there was a slight change. I can't remember what it was, but that did change something.
I guess in some ways, though, this is a sort of a pretty big one. We now automatically will read changes to the current focused control when you're under it. So, like in all other places, you'll always know this. Like, what's a good example? If you check a checkbox or something like that.
I thought we did support
state you're probably
changes.
Right. We probably already did state changes. So what's a better example?
There aren't many
examples. But anyway, if there's, say, you're on a button or something and its name changes because you press it in Java, that will now automatically be spoken and shown on Braille displays and things like that. So that's good.
I've definitely got your input up a bit loud, this one.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, well.
Tough. A few little Microsoft Word changes where performance is a bit better when you use table navigation commands now. Just a little bit better. And also for some tables with merged cells, especially when you merge cells over multiple rows, that's been improved somewhat. Sometimes NVIDIA would get a bit lost. And the final things I just want to mention is some little bug fixes to PowerPoint as people have been using it more and more.
Mostly me.
reports coming in. And
mostly
so
from me.
Just a few little ones just about it. Not it had a problem where it was reading the bottom line twice if the last line was a blank line. That's
that one's
been
from me.
Fixed. And the other one is on some people's systems, objects, not mine, some objects were speaking twice when you were tabbing to them.
That was mine.
Uh-huh. So we fixed that. Actually, Jamie fixed that one. Yeah, so that's all from, and as I say, you know, read the What's New document because there's plenty of other things, but they're just some of the highlights,
the
really.
So I guess the other thing that we wanted to cover in this podcast is the new release process. So we've always had, you know, a process where we sort of try to do 3 releases a year. Sometimes it was 2, but in the last few years, it's always been 3. that process has worked fairly well for us. We have betas and then we have RCs, but we were starting to find that we were running into some problems, particularly if we wanted to get changes out. You know, we had an RC and then we wanted to, you know, a translator might make a change, and we were allowing translators to submit new languages and so on between RC1, after release candidates. But what we were starting to find is, well, first of all, what really sparked this off was we did a release candidate and then a change went in and then the release came out, and because there was no release candidate between, we actually discovered that change was causing it crash, well, causing NVDA to not start at all for Gaelic, I think it was. Mm-hmm. And that's not really a very ideal situation. The second thing was, Mick, I'm just trying to remember exactly, but I know that we were basically starting to say, well, look, we weren't getting enough testing on things. Releases, we kept ending up with the situation where a release would snowball, so you'd end up going, because this hasn't been tested widely, now we've got to wait 2 months because we've got to fix all these different issues. And it meant that we were afraid to start working on the next release, and it also made planning for the next release very difficult. And so we ended up saying, well, can't we go for a different system where things actually... let's just tell you what we've got with the new system. So now we have, in branches terms, we now have master and next. So master is always what everything, all new code should be based on. And it is basically we want to keep it at beta quality at all times. So, essentially, we don't do betas anymore. Master snapshots are what you should be using if you want beta quality. Then we have, when we do work on a particular issue, we do it in a separate branch, and then that gets put into a branch that we call next. And it incubates for 2 weeks, like a caterpillar. It incubates, and at the end of that 2-week period, if there haven't been any issues reported, then it gets pushed into master. So the idea is that stuff gets tested on next for 2 weeks. So if you were running master snapshots before, you should be, you know, ideally you'd be running next snapshots now. And if you were running betas before, you'd run master. Now, if there is an issue, it has to be untouched for 2 weeks before it can graduate from next to master. And so we've got this, whatever is ready in master at the time we decide to go for a release, and I'll talk about more of that in a second, is in the release. So the idea is if a feature, if we discover bugs in a feature and it doesn't get merged, anything that goes into next can also be just backed out completely if we decide it's not working at all. So I was going somewhere with that sentence.
So in theory, we'll talk about this properly, but in theory, we could call a release at any time because master, in theory, should be nice and stable.
Yeah,
at any time now, and it allows people to focus specifically on the specific features. We really are enforcing the fact that when you're working on a new feature, it does need to be done in its own branch.
It also makes it very simple for translators. They only ever translate off master.
Yes.
They never translate off any other branch.
Yeah.
Now, then we got thought, well, if we're doing this, we could take it to the next level and say, well, yeah, release can be made at any time, so why not? And so now we have, we wanted to make sure we always get, you know, that number of releases out a year. So we now have scheduled releases. So basically, in February, May, and August, February, May, August, and November, we freeze master on the first of those months, mm-hmm. or closest business day two, for 2 weeks so that translators can make sure that any features that just got pushed into master can be translated. And then on the 15th, we release RC1. And then there has to be at least 1 week between the release of the release candidate and the final release. So if there's no problems in RC1 at all, then we just go final on the 22nd. If there is a problem in RC1, that change gets made, we can release another release candidate, but then we have to wait a week. So the final release candidate, the last one, should always be the same as the release, except for the version number, obviously. Mm. And that stops any issues of, you know, no crashes or the like, nothing really nasty can creep in there unless it's come out in the release candidate before. So users have had a chance to check it out.
And this obviously allows us then to, because we sort of promise now to have, four releases a year, we won't be focusing on, we won't be going, oh, we want this, you know, we definitely want this feature in this release or whatever, and things will be held back. This is all now just about, you know, if things are ready to go, it should be in the user's hands. Mm. And, you know, so people are going to see releases a lot more and, you know, they're still going to be stable.
There may be some releases that don't have as many, you know, sort of...
That's right. Features. They could be a bit smaller, yeah. But they're still important.
And I guess the thing is it makes it... It's also a mindset change for us. You know, we're no longer afraid to, like, we've done so much stuff on Next since we froze for the release, and we're just not really afraid to do that anymore. Whereas, even though we probably shouldn't have been in the past, but we still were a bit, because we couldn't let users test stuff without actually putting it into master, really. I mean, you can make snapshots for a branch where you can do try builds, but the reality is that, you know, you get wider testing when it's all in one thing. So that's what Next is all about.
Yeah.
So, in summary, if you want Bleeding Edge, you want Next. If you want beta, you want master. If you want real stability, you go for stable releases or maybe RCs. And if you are a translator, you should only ever be translating off master. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, I think this release isn't going to be on the 22nd because we've just discovered an issue today which is going to require a fix in master and is therefore going to need another release candidate.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, I should say it's going to require a fix in RC.
Yeah.
Damn it. There's another branch called RC, which is what happens after it freezes. So technically, master is now for the next release.
Yeah.
Clear as mud?
Hmm.
Just trying to think if there's anything else apart from... Is there anything else?
No, I don't think so.
In that case, I would like to throw a thanks out to our one loyal sponsor, Adobe. We do have, you know, plenty of other supporters, but Adobe have, you know, that really provide a huge amount of financial support to us, the biggest support that we have.
Yes, thank you.
And also, of course, thanks to all of our users that donate to us as well. That also forms a significant part of what keeps the project alive.
Absolutely.
So every little bit, you know, even in those $5 donations or even less, they help in a really big way.
Yes, they do. Thank you.
And I think that's it.
Yeah.
Should just throw a little sneak peek out there and say that in a future podcast we may be talking about configuration profiles.
Oh.
So stay tuned.
All right.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.